Okay, the reading this week is in Joshua chapter 22. So if you want to head over there in your Bible, we promised you last week we're going to get a little something different from the long list of places and cities and tribes and families.
So we get a story that's new to most people.
Oh, this is such a fat. Well, okay, two parts.
Yeah.
Let's be fair about that.
Yep.
Part of what's happening in about the first nine verses is those tribes who are settling on the east side, who were required to go back, to come in and help conquer, they're now being allowed to go back to their families.
And it's a relatively uplifting session in that, you know, it's repeated a couple of times in this relatively short section, you know, and there was blessing, and Joshua was blessing them. I mean, so it's, you know, it's really upbeat, it's really positive. Because the other thing is, they're going home because the work is done. You know, going back to how we ended last week with chapter 21, that whole God has kept his promises, it's all done, as far as God intended, you know, what God meant by these promises.
They did what they were required to do.
It.
They had fulfilled their duty to the nation.
And so they're going home, and blessing is being repeatedly pronounced with a reminder, keep the law.
Okay, so I want to say something about that. Look at verse 5 of chapter 22, and it's one of several examples that we could point to. You said a reminder to keep the law.
Yep.
Verse 5. Only be very careful to observe the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God and to walk in on his, all his ways and to keep his commandments, hold fast to him, and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. There's an interesting blending of ideas there that are worth noting because of an effort, I think, sometimes today to separate these ideas, right?
Yeah.
So he talks about loving the Lord with all your heart, and diligently serving him, right? All of that's in that verse.
Right.
But he also talks about the need for obedience.
Yep.
In fact, love the Lord your God and walk in his ways and keep his commandments, right?
Right.
And so I think sometimes people want to separate love for God with obedience, as though a focus on obedience is minimizing the love for God. Or the important thing is that I love God with my heart, not do I check all the boxes in my obedience. Sometimes people talk that way.
Right.
And what we have here is exactly the opposite, that they're blended and they go together. In fact, one leads to the other because we love God.
Right.
We are very careful to observe the commandment that's in the law.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is, you know, and even there, you know, to take that a step further, even the way, was that verse 5 ends a little bit with that, serve him with all your heart, with all your soul, little echoes of the Shema there, right? You know, the basic command, Deuteronomy 6, which Jesus will later hold up as the greatest commandment, you know, which is Lord, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so, you know, you notice that by capping it that way with an echo of that great commandment, serving and obeying is part of what it means. You know, again, just really emphasizing the greatest command of love God. Because people today love to do that. Oh, didn't mean to do this. People, they really, really like, you know, to basically, you know, say that love means basically affirming people on what they do. And they quote unquote Christianize that with, you know, Jesus taught love with no direct object or no other qualifiers. You know, and so what's funny is here you're seeing even love of God being put explicitly into that, to your point, but using the greatest commandments echoes to say this whole Jesus taught love, love God, love neighbor. Yeah, but there were qualifiers always around that. It wasn't just love them as you see fit or love by the world's definition. Part of how you really love God is, as Jesus says in the New Testament, keep my commandments.
And I think there are some people who kind of frown on the idea that we ought to be really careful about our obedience. Some people will say, you know, just be, you know, being too nitpicky. You know, take for example, you know, the conversations we have among ourselves about how churches use funds and things like that.
Right.
It's very popular with some people today to say—
That's nitpicking.
Yeah, we're just nitpicking. We're just too detail-oriented. And even to say— wrongly, I think, that it's Pharisaic. You're being like the the Pharisees.
Tithing mint and dill and cumin.
Yeah, you know, tithing the spices.
Got ahead of you there.
What's that?
I got ahead of you there.
Yeah, well, no, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
it's like the Pharisees and tithing their spices. And so then what they argue is that just worry about the big stuff and don't fret over the little details, right?
Right.
And I think that's a setup for what happens later in this chapter. Because we actually follow with a story. It's a fascinating story involving these tribes who go back to the east and settle, right?
Right.
And
the whole issue always was they're going to be separate from us. We don't want them to be separate or create a separate identity. And you know, that goes all the way back to Deuteronomy when they were getting the land over there.
So you pick up in verse 10.
Right.
And there's this Old Testament story that was never getting any attention.
Yep.
But it's a fascinating story. So what they do is they go and they build an altar.
Yep. Which you're not supposed to do in theory, because except where God places his name, which right now is in Shiloh.
And so they build this altar, and the people in the West find out about it.
I think we've got commandment breakers already.
Yeah. So notice, they don't say, well, you know, but that part of the law is just a detail.
It's a long way all the way back to Shiloh when you live in Gad.
And it doesn't say, you know, it's about God and they love God. And so even the altar's not authorized.
God knows their heart and they mean well. Their intentions are good. They want to worship. Who's against worshiping God?
Yes, exactly. But that isn't what happens.
No.
They're ready to go to war with their own brethren over this.
Well, and that's part, actually, like, you know, because, you know, the details matter in these stories, right? And I think especially verse 13, to your point, not only are they willing to go to war, but as they're willing to go to war, verse 13, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, goes. And here's the thing I understand. You know, we've met Phinehas before. We met Phinehas in the book of Numbers. And Phinehas is the priest who understands, you know, that it's not just, you know, offering sacrifices and reading the law and teaching the law. Being a priest means carrying a sword sometimes,
right,
or a spear, actually, in Numbers. Because the whole point in Numbers was when Phinehas saw the rank, defiant sin of the people at the Baal Peor incident, Phinehas took a spear, went into an offender's, you know, fornicating tent, and killed them both. You know, and so why do we know that, you know, you didn't just say they sent a delegation or sent an army or whatever. They took Phinehas. Why? Because this is a priest who is known for his zeal in defending the holiness and the integrity of God's law and God's people. If you're going to sin in Israel on Phinehas' watch, be prepared to die.
So the spirit of this generation is that because we love the Lord our God, we're going to keep his commandments. And in this case, including the commandments, is you just go throw up altars anywhere you want to.
Yeah.
Of course, what's fascinating about this story is when confronted, the people in the East have a whole different story about this.
Yeah, we're not trying to build a rival faction or, you know, another denomination. Worship at the church of your choice.
Yeah. In fact, it's exactly the opposite.
Right.
It's not an altar. It's a monument to remind us where we're supposed to worship.
And by the way, it's been a while, but, you know, because, you know, this goes back to January, February-ish. But in the book of Joshua at the beginning, they were very big on setting up stone markers. You know, whether it's the, you know, correct, setting up the memorial, the stone, the 12 stones when they crossed the Jordan. Sometimes less inviting stone memorials, like the one over Achan, but a reminder of what happened there, or the stone cairn they built up over the kings of the Canaanites who were called at the cave after they, you know, vanquished them. And so there's been a history throughout the book of setting up stone-based memorials and markers as reminders of. And so in one sense, within the context of the book of Joshua, doing this actually is not out of left field, though it may seem like that to us. They have been building memorials and markers throughout their time in the land, per this very book itself. It's just been a while because we've been doing lot lines and city platting for a while.
That's right. Well, the interesting to me is now you wind up with some cautionary teaching on the other side that we need to be careful about making assumptions about people.
Yeah.
And the value of actually having conversation. You know, before going to war, they have a conversation,
right,
and they find out this isn't all what we thought it was,
right,
and we didn't understand what they were doing, and they're actually able to settle this amicably pretty quickly once they sit down and talk to each other.
Right, right. And so, you know, in verse 32, you know, everybody goes following, you know, everybody goes home. And what's funny is, and they called the altar witness, for they said it is a witness between us that Yahweh is God. You know, so that's the whole point. This is for illustrative purposes only. We will not be actually sacrificing anything on it.
Yeah, and to me, that is such a vital reminder that when we have an issue with someone, that we need to go and talk to them.
Yeah.
We need to go and have the conversation. And, you know, oftentimes not literal combat, but brethren go to war each other over misunderstandings. And, you know, I remember a lady coming to me one time and saying she'd been mad at me for 7 years.
This is a biblical number.
I had no idea. And when she explained to me what had upset her, a misunderstanding, really simple. In fact, it was misunderstanding about the meaning of a word.
Oh, man.
She interpreted a word this way. I meant it that way. And look, it took a minute
to fix it.
7 years to have the conversation. And it just ought not to be that way among us. So what a great example here, first, of their powerful spirit about, we got to do what the law says, even if it means calling out and punishing our brethren when they're violating the law. And then the second lesson is, yeah, but have the conversation.
Right.
Make sure you know what's going on. Make sure you have your facts straight. So, wow, really, really rich chapter this week to stop and ponder the lesson, some things to have conversation with kids about. Really, really great section of teaching, and hope that it'll be a blessing to you as you make your way through chapter 22 this week.